history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there just waiting to be told, the kind of stories that'll amaze you, that might just alter your perspective a little. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we embark on that journey, boy, do we end up learning a lot. We're educated, we're also entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And we're going to experience a little different side of it today. So often we hear from World War II veterans on this program, and they remember the men they served with, who they often refer to as the real heroes, the ones who never came home, the more than 406,000 Americans who died while serving in World War II. Today, we're going to learn about two of those men from their families, who are learning more about them three quarters of a century later because of the work of the DPAA, the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, which is working to identify and return the remains of those long-lost heroes. On December 7th, this year in Madera, California, Alva J. Cremaine, Jack as his family knew him, will finally be given a proper military burial. Exactly 77 years after the young Marine was killed aboard the battleship USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor. You're going to hear from two of his nieces, starting with Donna Morin. And Donna, did you ever hear about your Uncle Jack when you were growing up?
Oh, yes. My grandmother talked about him, and my mother talked about him. She had a little grass skirt that he'd sent from Hawaii that I actually wore as a child, and I was upset when it didn't fit me anymore, but my daughter and my granddaughter have both had it on and played in it.
Boy, what a treasure that is, sent from Pearl Harbor before the attack.
Yes, it was in a package of Christmas gifts that Jack sent to his family, a little set of ivory dominoes and a Navy doll and several things that he sent for his family that arrived after his death.
And, of course, the family had a few different stories told to it by the government over that time, which we'll hear about. But I'm interested in what you've been able to piece together about who he was and what he was doing there at Pearl Harbor.
Well, we don't know why he decided to enlist, but he enlisted shortly after his graduation from high school. He graduated from Rocky Ford High School, and then the next year he enlisted in July of 1940 in Denver, and he was immediately taken to his training in C School. We know he was proud to be a Marine from things we've heard from the family, and he didn't get in any trouble like some of the people did when they were off the ship. He was very good.
And as far as what happened on that Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, has your family ever received any details of where he was on the ship or what might have happened to him?
No, we don't know. We have heard that it was a day that he was to be able to leave the ship, and that approximately 40 men had lined up on the deck of the ship just prior to the bombing. So he was maybe on the deck waiting to leave the ship.
And you have a family scrapbook here that I guess has been kind of rediscovered in this whole process that gives you some clues as to what your family was going through in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor?
Yes. We found it about a month ago, and my grandmother kept quite a scrapbook of anything to do with World War II. It's full of news clippings. It has the telegrams that my grandparents received about him being missing, and a telegram about they thought at one point that he was a survivor, but later found out he wasn't. My grandmother kept news clippings of other boys in the area as they joined, and just everything, whole papers full of information. So there was quite a bit in that book that we could piece together the puzzle that we didn't know.
What has that taught you? What have you gained from this process?
I think the book that my grandmother kept was probably a healing process, because she'd had a child that was passed away before Jack, that was fresh in their mind. And then losing him was fresh in her mind. And I think she probably didn't talk a lot about it, but this was her healing process to keep her scrapbook. And I'm kind of glad, because now today, even though I wasn't born when he was, you know, involved in Pearl Harbor, it tells me a lot of the history and how proud my grandmother had to be of his service. It meant a lot to her.
Can you explain to us how this came about and how significantly your family's world has changed here in the last few months?
Wow. that's a big one. Elaine's mother was contacted in 2001. She was the only sibling still alive. My mother passed away in 1978. But in 2001, she was asked for a DNA sample, which led to finding the remains of Jack and having them identified. So she wanted to live long enough to be able to find her brother, but she passed away 2 years ago without that knowledge. She talked about it a lot, that she wanted him found. Most of the family members have been to Pearl Harbor and seen the memorials there, and it was just something that she was looking forward to, was finding her brother. Now that we've found him, it's a joy, but it's sad. But it will bring a closure.
The kind of closure long hoped for, but for so many years beyond the family's reach. Elaine Holliday is another niece of Jack Cremaine's, a cousin of Donna's. Let's find out what she knew of this fallen Marine as she grew up.
I felt like I really knew him well because my mother talked of him so much.
What are some of the things she said about him? What was the picture you formed in your mind?
What an upstanding person he was. He was a de Molay, and it was very important to him. He just was a very good person.
And can you help us understand how significant a concern this was to your mother, that someday his remains be identified?
It was everything. It was constantly on her mind, especially as she grew older, that she wanted him identified and brought home and for her to really know where he was.
And had you known until this scrapbook popped up that the family had been given that false hope of him as being a survivor that was even reported in the newspaper?
Yes, I did. I can't imagine the grief they suffered.
So your mother gave her DNA and passed away not knowing what that was going to lead to. What was it like for you to find out that his remains had been identified?
It was indescribable, you know. I think I cried for her and for Grandma and Grandpa and my Aunt Joan and the whole family.
How'd you find out?
I was notified by phone call from a Marine representative, a Mrs. Hattie Johnson from Virginia.
Is that one of those moments where you're not sure if it's real or not?
Correct. After we hung up and a couple of days later, I just thought, did that really happen?
Well, and there's still more to come.
Well, I always knew how respectful the military was of their own missing, and how important it was to bring them home. What really surprised me was our community's reaction. How important it is to so many people that I don't really know or know just briefly, but it's people that have served in the military or people that have had family members missing. This is just as important to them almost as it is to us. That really surprised me.
When you look at those Christmas gifts over there that he mailed, not knowing he wouldn't be alive anymore on Christmas 1941, what do you see? What comes to mind when you look at those?
How much he loved his family. They were important to him. Growing up, they were all very close.
And that photo there of the young lady with the grass skirt on, that's your mother?
Yes. She was a beautiful lady.
And she told you a few stories about him?
Yes. Especially about the family dog. The little dog came home with her father, just a barely alive little puppy. And her mother nursed the little dog back to life. And this little dog was a special dog. It was a little shepherd, I believe. And her name was Lindy. And Lindy was one of the kids. She went everywhere with them. And mother especially told the one time when the little dog hurt her paw, got it cut up, and how she went to her mother, just like the other children, put her head on her lap and gave her her paw to show her where it was hurting.
And you've got a picture of that dog with your Uncle Jack right there. Looks like they had a pretty good bond, too.
Yes. Yes, that little dog was a very important part of the family.
I don't know if this is an easy one to answer, but you never met him, but you heard about him your whole life. How often have you thought about this idea over the years, that maybe your family would finally have some answers or some finality, some closure?
Oh, all the time, because it was constantly something my mother discussed. It's constant.
When you think about her right now, knowing what you know, knowing what your family's going to be doing on December 7th this year, what comes to mind?
How proud she would be. And, of course, my sister and I, my mother was quite a spunky little person, and we figure she's has a hand in all this, helping them arrange things.
Well, do you want to tell me what is going to happen on December 7th?
Yes, there'll be a service for Jack. It'll be at 2 o'clock here in Madera, and it'll be full military honors, and we just feel so proud.
So that'll be 77 years to the day since he was killed.
To the day. It's amazing.
Let me ask you this. Since your mother was so fond of him and this was such a big deal to her, have you ever wondered or did you ever hear her hypothesize what kind of life he would have had if it wasn't cut short at Pearl Harbor?
No, I don't think I did. But we all knew he would have been somebody special doing things. He was a leader.
I'm sure there are some things that I haven't asked you about that are relevant to you when it comes to who he was and the fact that you now know where he is and he can be laid to rest in a proper way. What has this done for you? What have you learned from this, or how has this affected you, this process?
Well, our family's always been close, but I think it's drawn us even closer. My sister is very interested in genealogy, and she's going to be joining the DAR here soon. So we found things out about our family that we had no idea.
I think the most special thing that we found was two little pictures, and they look like something that maybe they were taken in a photo booth. There are pictures, one of them with my Aunt Ruth and Jack, and one with my mother and Jack, and the date on the back said August 31st, 1941. So that was probably the last pictures or the last time that my aunt and my mother were with their brother. So those are very special. And it just kind of cracked me up, the one with my mother. He had taken his Marine hat off and put it on my mother's head, and she being a five-year-old is got a big smile, and his hair is all messed up. It's all sticking up from taking that hat off. So it's kind of special pictures.
Well, and I guess maybe that underscores that the loss of his life on December 7th, 1941 was not just a loss for him, not just a loss for the Marines or the government, but a real loss to that family, if he was that close to his siblings and his folks.
Yes, I think so. It's been a healing process for us also to find these pictures and put things together and kind of, you know, put pieces of the puzzle together on a timeline. It's kind of a healing process, and it's something we're very proud of his service. We're also very proud of our country, how they take care of their veterans, and all the information that's been shared with us is just a little overwhelming.
Yeah, is there anything for you, Donna, that's been eye-opening through this? You have right in front of you here a big binder that the Defense Department and the POW/MIA County Agency sent your way. Is there anything in there that you looked at, you said, wow, this is amazing?
I think the history of the ship, there's quite a bit of the history, and then also there is each bone that was found, there's a DNA report, and all of the work that has gone into putting this booklet together and all the time that's been spent by many people to identify those remains. It's been years in the process to try and find all of these people. And when we've read accounts of how they searched the ship and collected the bones, and they would put 200 bones in a bag, and that was what constituted how many bones are in a human being. It's just incredible the amount of work they've gone to find these men, and I hope they find them all. I just hope that brings closure to many more people.
Well, yeah, on that topic, you know, I'm sure there are some people out there who would say, from a practical standpoint, digging up all these bodies 7 decades later and combing through them to try to identify them, some people might say that it wasn't worth it, or that it was a waste of effort or time or resources. Sure doesn't seem like it was a waste when you consider what it means to your family.
It's amazing. It's just closure, and to even have pictures of, you know, the bones that are being sent to us. It's a little overwhelming, but it just shows the type of care that they've given to each one of those remains that they found. They're special, and I'm sure it takes a special person to do that type of work. It would be really hard. I would be too emotional to do that, you know, but it's taken great care how they've studied these remains and be able to put them back together to send to the families. It's incredible.
You know, I asked your cousin, but what about you? When you heard stories about Uncle Jack over the years, did you ever find yourself wondering, what if he'd lived? What if he wasn't one of those 406,000 Americans who gave their lives in World War II?
I think he was a handsome man and he'd have probably come home with some hula girl and had a nice life. I think, you know, it would have been great. I think my mother would have been excited to see him grow up, and Elaine's mother as well. And, you know, all his children and grandchildren would have been just special.
And what are you looking forward to as far as December 7th goes, on a day when the nation pauses to mark what happened at Pearl Harbor in 1941? Your family's going to have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity as well.
I really think it's going to be the most beautiful ceremony that I've ever seen. It'll have the Avenue of the Flags and bagpipes and special songs and a eulogy. I just think we've had time to prepare this, and it's going to be an outstanding service. And I think it would be something that my grandparents and our mothers would be proud to know that we're honoring him this late date.
Now, if someone hadn't seen any of these photos or heard any of this story and just walked up to you and said, who is your Uncle Jack? How would you answer that question?
He was a man that loved his country. He, you know, went as a very young person and enlisted. And even though we don't know his motives, I believe that he loved his country very much.
Enough to make the ultimate sacrifice. That's Donna Morin talking about her uncle Jack Cremaine, killed in the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 and now finally identified. He'll be laid to rest in Madera, California on the 77th anniversary of that day of infamy. You can explore photos relating to this story of Jack and his family at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll have more from this family plus another family going through a very similar experience when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Put $250 in a savings account and you'll start earning dividends. Who else is going to do that for you? And access? So easy. Over 30,000 ATMs. Free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Again, the website myeecu.org, or just pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance today to look at things from another perspective. So often we hear World War II vets on this program remembering the more than 400,000 Americans who never came home from the war. But today we're learning about some of the fallen. And in their individual stories are reflected so many common themes and attributes that are really applicable to so many more of those courageous Americans who gave their lives for our freedom. Jack Cremaine was one of them, a Marine killed aboard the USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor 77 years ago. years ago, Jack's remains have gone unidentified until this year. That's 75 years of agony and uncertainty, as underscored by a letter the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency recently provided to his family. We'll hear more from another one of Jack's nieces, Elaine Holliday, in a moment. But here's Donna Morin reading a letter her mother wrote to the President of the United States 17 years after losing her brother on the first day of the war.
Okay, it's dated December 4th, 1958. Dear Mr. President, may I introduce myself? I am the former Miss Joan Cremaine, now Mrs. Willis Creamer, age 23 and mother of four. It has long been upon my heart to seek information of my only brother, PFC Alva Jack Cremaine, United States Marines. He was stationed at Pearl Harbor aboard the USS Oklahoma on the day of December 7, 1941. Jack was reported missing on that fateful day, and earlier that year, my 11-year-old sister died with polio. In September of 1941, my other sister was married and moved thousands of miles away to her new home. This left me the only child of four to remain at home and just the age of five. Cutting our family of six down to three in such a manner has left my parents unable to talk of the family that was. This is why I have turned to you. I do so long to know my brother and of his ship. What became of it? Was he on board? How old he was? How long he was a Marine? And what was his tour of duty? Is his resting place at sea, or is he among the many buried on land and unknown? The only picture I have of Jack is a mental one, of him bursting through the front door of our Colorado home, sweeping me into his arms, and saying, "Hi, brat." An insult to a little girl, but now a treasured memory. I hope someone of your staff will be able to find information of my loved one and is able to answer my longing heart. God bless and keep our boys, and world peace be my prayer. Mrs. Willis E. Creamer, Madera, California.
And so, until the government gave you this folder, you never knew that letter existed?
No, I didn't. It was a shock.
Yeah, what goes through your mind? I mean, do you imagine yourself in your mother's shoes when you read that?
Yes, I do, because this was 1958, and it's been several years past his death, and she's still wanting answers to her questions, and I can't imagine them telling a five-year-old at the time, you know, details about her brother's death, but now she's 23 and still wants answers, and it kind of tore at my heart.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like a letter like that helps underscore how important and valuable a development this is for him to be identified.
Yes, it was very important to the family that they wanted some answers, and it just seemed like there wasn't a lot of information given. So now we are, you know, a generation after the fact finding out the answers that our family would have liked to had.
And Elaine, I thought of one more thing to ask you. In this time, since this big news has come to you, have you ever found yourself wondering, oh, what if my mother hadn't contributed her DNA? What if she said, it's a long time ago, it doesn't matter anymore?
Oh, I can't imagine her doing that. But thankfully, she didn't. I'm glad she kept pursuing this and kept it foremost in all of our minds. Oh, what a great country we live in. I just want the young children to know what happened on this date and to remember.
Well, you say that. You want the children to remember. Has any of this maybe changed your perspective?
We've always been a very, very patriotic family. Our parents made sure we knew and respected those that had served. And so we need to pass that on down to my grandchildren and their grandchildren.
And I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but I'm just going to ask it. On December 7th, when the flag is on the casket and they're playing Taps, what do you think you're going to be thinking about?
That they're all in heaven together, our family that's gone before us. And that they're looking down and saying, "Okay, children, you tried to do your best, and we're happy with you."
Well, I certainly will try to keep names and dates on my pictures for a future generation to know of things. You know, I'll try and be the great historian that my grandmother's been so that future generations have the answers.
Speaking of your grandmother, there's a photo of her over there, and that's taken at the Punch Bowl.
National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, one of the most beautiful places in Honolulu. They have the Courts of the Missing, where they list the names of all Americans in the Pacific who were not recovered. She's there with her hand next to his name, which I understand from here on out will look a little different if we go to visit there.
They're supposed to place a rosette by the names of those that were now identified. So next time we go, maybe we'll see a rosette by his name.
Well, and I asked Elaine about her mother. I bet you've considered what this would mean to your grandmother as well, Jack's mom.
Oh, yeah. She was very involved in American War Mothers and continued to be opening her home to servicemen. And she, as the War Mothers, was a representative to Fresno's Veterans Hospital. And she made many visits there to soldiers. And it was very important to her to serve those veterans. I think my family would be proud that we've been able to lay him to rest in the manner that he should be laid to rest. And I hope it's a pleasing service to the family. We're really proud to have this closure. It means a lot to the family.
And while Jack Cremaine's family will experience that closure on December 7th when he's given full military honors, the family of another Marine, Dwight Randall of Fresno, California, will have that moment November 20th, 75 years after he was killed in the Battle of Tarawa. Here's one of his nieces, Linda Gist, who grew up hearing stories of her heroic uncle.
I heard about it all the time from my grandma and my dad and my mother. They loved him. He was only a young man when he was killed, so he really never had a chance to be bad. So he was always the good one in the family, which was nice. And it was always kind of sad. We always knew about him in the back of our mind, and my grandma always had the Gold Star mother in the window, and she was very proud of him. And his other brothers were in the military, too. But if you've never met them, then you really kind of don't know anything about it. And one of my nephews was really a World War II buff, and he started kind of trying to figure out what happened, and he got on a couple websites looking, and then we got involved with this Facebook page, the Tarawa MIA Families, and got on that, and they started recovering the bodies and identifying them from Tarawa and the Oklahoma. So when they finally notified us, which was in October that they identified him, they got a hold of us, I was kind of shocked. And I didn't really know how I felt about it because we had never met him. And then the more we found out about him and the more we found out my grandmother had written these letters and my aunts, it was kind of sad. And when they asked us where we wanted to bury him, we had looked into Liberty, which is in Fresno. There's a plaque out there that my grandma had put up as a memorial plaque. And I had gone over to the punch bowl and found his name on the missing soldiers' wall. I called Liberty and they were full. So then I called Belmont to see if he could be buried close to my grandma and grandpa, and they had one plot left out there. One of my other cousins also came out there, and she came in and told us, she said, there's a plot left next to my father, which would have been my mother's, but my dad died young, and so my mother is buried with her other husband. So he's going to be buried next to my dad, his brother, and so it will be my grandfather, my grandmother, and then my dad, and then Dwight. So it's kind of exciting to know that that's where he's going to be. He'll be with his family. So he got returned, and everyone's affected. I think everybody in our family is affected by it. And all my cousins, who I haven't seen some of them in years, are all back together again. And the MIA POW agency, they're flying three of them in, at all expenses paid, to come to the service. So kind of neat. I've never been to a military service, so I'm looking forward to going. They're going to have a 21-gun salute. So I now found out the meaning between that. I didn't know what a 21-gun salute meant, that it was a sum total of 1776. I've also learned about why we fold the flag the way we do. So there's a lot of things that we're all learning about it. I'm fascinated what a brotherhood the Marine Corps has. It's unbelievable. And what our government does to bring home soldiers that have fallen. I had no idea.
Yeah, it sounds like you've learned a lot through this process. And I want to talk about the things you've learned that really don't have specifically to do with your uncle, but also about your uncle. How much more have you learned about him, who he was, what he did, and why he matters 75 years after he was killed?
He graduated from Roosevelt in 1939. One of the people from the MIA, I think, found his picture on Ancestry.com in the yearbook and sent it to us, which was fascinating. He worked for Dale Brothers Coffee, which was a local firm here in town. made $30 a week, which I also thought was interesting. When he enlisted about 40 days after Pearl Harbor, and he was paid $70 a month. I find that really fascinating because I'm not too sure how many people today would take a cut and pay to go in the service. He applied to be a radio man, and that's one reason he was one of the first ones that was killed, because he was in, they called them alligators, a landing vehicle that had tracks on it, so they could get over the reef in Tarawa, where the other ones couldn't. They got hung up on the reef and they had to wade in. But because he had a radio antenna on it, they figured that they were some of the first ones that were killed. And from what I understand, my nephew had contacted one of the other families, and they think that their uncle was on the same amphibious vehicle as our uncle, and they called it Little Beans because the guy called all of his guys that he worked with his Little Beans. We're meeting a lot of people, too. That's another thing that's amazing. They go to each other's funerals. This one lady that's on Facebook, she flies to him. They're going to the ceremonies in Tarawa. There's a ceremony in Tarawa on the 20th, and there's also a big one at the Punch Bowl.
You just described, you know, what had happened to your uncle there, when and where he was killed and why. Now, did you know those details before, or did you just know, hey, this was this guy I never met who died in a war I don't really remember?
I knew he was a radio man because my father talked about it, but that's about all I knew. I had no idea that the battle was 76 hours and that we lost over 1,000 Marines in 76 hours, most of them the very first day. There was like 6,000 Japanese on the island. And it wasn't really an island. It was 800 yards wide at its widest point, 2.5 miles long. I had no idea how small it was. So they had like close to 6,000 Marines, Japanese Marines is what they called them. They had 1,000 Korean laborers that were forced laborers. And when it was all over, the Japanese and the Koreans were almost all dead. The Japanese didn't want to surrender. We had 35,000 troops. And that's what I could not believe. There was 35,000 people that were attacking, both Marines and Navy. So 1,000 of them got killed. They said more Marines were killed in this battle than any other battle in the time frame of the war. More were killed in Guadalcanal, but it was a 5-month period.
So you're learning more about the military history there, the battle, what your uncle's role was in it. I guess the one thing you did know before this last month was the effect it had on your grandmother to lose him, one of her 10 children, was that right?
Yes. It was one of the middle children, and it was terrible on my grandmother. She was really affected. No one wants to lose a child. I can't imagine how that made her feel. I was told by the other brothers and sisters that she changed because of it, and I know she mourned him when I was young. So he always had his picture on the wall, and it was always, you know, honored. She always celebrated his birthday. So you know, you just don't forget your kids.
Well, and since you've gotten all this material from the government, that's even included letters that your grandmother wrote the government? What do those letters say, and what kind of feel do you get from reading some of that correspondence?
My daughter read one of the ones my grandma wrote, where she's asking the Marine Corps if she could have a picture of his grave, and my daughter was really emotional. Now, she really didn't know anything about Dwight, and she just said it was so sad, and my grandma wrote several letters, and the Marine Corps was very, very nice. They always answered. They always replied, tried to reassure that, you know, they were going to try to identify him.
But your grandmother died not knowing if her son would ever be identified.
Well, my grandma and my grandpa both have passed away, and all of his siblings. So no one knew that we recovered him. So if they're in heaven, they'll know it, hopefully. We don't know, but, you know, it's kind of like you kind of hope that.
Describe for me the moment when you found out, because it doesn't sound like this is something you were even dialed into, hoping for, thinking could happen. How did you find out, and how did you feel when you got that news?
Well, we were contacted by the Marine Corps, and they said that they had positively identified him. They had tentatively identified him several months before, but they didn't tell us. They don't really advise you until they positively identify him through the DNA. I was shocked. But I didn't think then they identified him. Everything was just, that was it. You know, we knew where he was and everything. I had no idea that we were going to have the service, that it was a big deal, that that was what they were going to do. That just flabbergasted me. I still am taken back by what they're going to do.
Well, give us a sense of that, because it sounds like you've learned a lot of things about what our country does for its fallen.
Well, at our meeting, we had a Marine that came in from Lemoore Naval Air Station. We had a mortician from the Navy that came here from Maryland. And this Hattie Johnson, who represents the MIA POW group. And they told us they just had found not too long ago a soldier from the Civil War that had been buried, and he was intact. His skeleton was in his uniform, and they found his family, which was long gone. I couldn't believe that, you know, that they would even bother. But the thing that I like is our country, they said, they will not leave a soldier if they can find them and bring them home. They'll go to the ends to bring them home because that's an agreement they made with the soldier when they enlisted. And Dwight, when they prepare him to bring him home, a Marine will stay with him from Hawaii to the States and stay with him until he's buried. So he has an escort the whole entire time. It's pretty amazing. I pretty neat country.
Yeah, that's kind of unique, isn't it?
Yes, it's the only country in the world that does it. They fly in three relatives. They pay for their airfare to the services. They pay for two nights lodging, and they give them a snippet for food if they need it. It's just really fascinating what they do, you know. I think it's a pretty great country that, you know, if they ask you to fight for them, and in those days, people willingly wanted to help our country because we were attacked, that the country cares enough, even 75 years later, to bring them home. It kind of makes you proud to be a citizen.
So, I mean, does it also tell you that what your uncle did, his sacrifice, is not forgotten, that it means something 75 years later?
Yes, I think all of the guys that sacrifice in any of the wars, it means a lot to people because I feel that we're free because of them. I'm thinking that if Japan and Germany had won the war, we would have a total different government. And the situations that we have today would certainly not be the way it is. We can have our own opinions and say what we want to say because they fought for us and we're free.
Well, that's really the bottom line, isn't it? Linda Gist and her family will honor her uncle Dwight Randall November 20th, 75 years after he was killed on Tarawa. We'll hear more from Linda when we come back, plus a resource for other families who may find themselves in the very same situation these families faced for all those years. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHS Master will take all your old VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an opportunity as you and your family prepare to give thanks this year to understand what it's like to be a Gold Star family that after decades of uncertainty finally receives the closure of knowing a loved one has been identified. Today we've heard from the families of two World War II Marines who just now in 2018 have been identified and will finally be laid to rest over the weeks ahead. Dwight Randall's family will watch him receive his long overdue military burial on November 20th. You've been hearing from his niece, Linda Gist, who has learned quite a bit about her uncle and about how our country honors the fallen.
It's a huge eye-opener, yeah. I am really taken back by it. I am impressed that the way they handled it. It's very professional. I never expected it. It really means a lot to everybody in the family. When you really get down to it, it means a lot.
And they sent you his medals and a bunch of other things that you never knew existed, I think, right? As far as the documentation, photos, information, what are some of the things that you've seen that you never would have seen without this happening?
Well, his whole DNA file, which to me is fascinating just in itself, how they identify people. His entire military record they gave us on a CD. They made a booklet of everything. They didn't lose anything. His entire military record has all of his allotments. It has his pay records. It has his mustered out sheets. It has when he checks in and checks out. Today, I was in business. People lose stuff like that. So that I was fascinated with. It is, I've learned so much about the military. I had no idea. I mean, we're not really a military family. All I know is when we were young, you know, it was Vietnam and everyone was trying to avoid Vietnam if possible. They didn't try to avoid World War II. They were attacked. He joined up 40 days, I think, after Pearl Harbor. And he was 22 when he was killed. Just a kid. My granddaughter's 22.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of different ways you can go as far as the perspective that gives you. What about looking at the photos they sent you? Had you ever seen any of these photos before?
Yes, I had seen his one, he's smiling in his uniform, which is his Happy Marine one. Then we saw his enlistment photo, which is like all of our driver's license photos. It's a terrible photo. And then one of the ladies that on their Facebook page went and found his Roosevelt High School from the class of 39 yearbook photo. None of us had seen that. He had curly hair and, you know, it was like, oh, it was, it's kind of neat to have them. And then she sent all of these photos from Tarawa after the battle that they were taking of his battalion, of the people that were, that had remained in it. Not very many people that were in his group. I think six guys out of his entire group lived.
Yeah, and you have a picture of those guys standing around a sign that has a lot more than six names on it. Tell me about that picture and what it means to you.
The picture is in memory of the valiant dead, and they died proudly, and it's a 2nd Amphibian Tractor Battalion, and it has maybe 30 names on it, and then the six guys that were survivors were there. And they put that, it was on Tarawa, they had it there. I wouldn't think that they would even bother. That surprised me. And they buried these guys in the process of having a battle in this 1 square mile. They were getting killed. The burial squads were coming in behind them while they were still fighting. I'm not too sure I would even have gotten off one of those amphibious vehicles when they had to get out like 500 yards, I was reading, from the shore because they were hung up on the reef, and they had to wade like up to their necks in the water to get to shore while they were being shot at.
Well, and I'm looking at your picture of that sign that you just read for us, and your uncle's name is one of a couple dozen names that are on there from that outfit. You never would have known that that sign existed, was ever on the island.
No, I wouldn't have. No, I had no idea at all that any of this stuff, that the pictures existed. And now all my cousins all want the pictures. I'm sending them to everyone. It's kind of a big forwarding thing. We now have a Facebook page for our family, which we made. So everybody's sharing information.
What do you think Thanksgiving is going to be like with this new topic of conversation that's come out of nowhere?
Interesting. We have one aunt is still alive. One of the brother's wives is still alive, but everyone else has passed. So we just have the cousins, and we've already been out to dinner. When we met with the Marines, we all went out to dinner, and it was fun. You know, it's just kind of fun getting together with all of them, and everybody has kids, and their kids have kids, so we're meeting their grandchildren. I've been in contact with one cousin out of probably about 30 all along, so then we're all kind of getting together again, and it's nice because we're old.
So this has brought your family closer together in a way that probably nothing else could.
Actually, yes, it would have never happened because we didn't really see each other.
And you mentioned that he and others were buried there during the battle, but in order for him to be returned back here to his native Fresno, California, first they had to take him off there, take him to Hawaii. His remains have been in Hawaii for all these years until technology got to the point and funding and the willpower. I mean, how amazing is just that journey of how it's gone from 1943 to 2018? What do you understand about what it took to make that happen?
Well, from what I understand is originally they're buried in these in it like a trench. They wrapped them up and they buried them. And then after the end of the battle, they put them in graves and they tentatively identified the groups. There was, I think, six in his battalion that were together. Somehow his dog tags were missing. He was killed in 43. In 46, they went and took the people in the graves. There was 580 Marines that they took to Schofield in Pearl Harbor, the base, and then they contacted the families of the ones they could identify, and the rest of them, they were buried at the Punch Bowl in an unknown soldier's grave. And so then as DNA became prevalent, then they started identifying more. His sister's DNA was the DNA that was used, and she was the last living relative.
And how long ago was it that she submitted her DNA?
Oh, I'm thinking 3 years ago. I didn't think that anything would come of it, to be honest with you.
And she passed away not knowing if anything would come of it either, right?
Right. She was in her 80s and she passed away and not maybe a year and a half ago.
How thankful are you that she did that before she passed?
I'm really grateful because my one cousin had bugged her about it and she did it. And her husband had been in the military, and I think that was something that got her to do it. I don't think she probably sent it in and probably didn't think that they'd ever do anything with it. At least that's the way I would feel. You know, I would give it to him, but, you know, what's going to come of it?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you and I would be having this conversation if she hadn't done that. You wouldn't know any of these things about your uncle, right?
I would not have known anything about my uncle, but I would not have become a World War II buff now that it's really fascinating me. So now I really like, I'm interested in everything about the war to see how that war was fought. It was a real interesting war because it was on two different shores. It was a bloodbath. I know I had one uncle came back from Europe and would never talk about it. You could ask him questions, he would never talk about it. And I was told not to ask.
Well, you say that you've really gotten into the war. Do you understand your uncle's sacrifice in a different light now? Do you have a different perspective on the importance of what he and the other 406,000 Americans who died in World War II did, the 16 million in uniform in World War II, how significant what they did was?
Yes, and I don't think they really knew what they were getting into when all of this was taking place and these guys were on those landing vehicles. I was reading in this book that they actually had kind of thought that the Japanese had left and it wasn't going to be a big deal because they weren't being fired on right then. There's 53,000. The number boggles my mind. 53,000 soldiers still missing from the war. A lot of them are at the bottom of the ocean. But that's what the Marines were telling us, that they still have 53,000 that are missing. That's a huge amount. It's unbelievable to me.
Well, that means there are a lot of other families out there that may not even know it's possible for this kind of closure or awareness or understanding to be achieved. And they're hearing you right now tell this story and they're saying, well, maybe they can do this for my grandpa or my uncle or whomever. What would you say to those people who maybe lost hope a long time ago that something like this was even possible?
Get on the internet, get a hold of the military branch that your relatives were in and see if you can send in DNA. Because if you never received any information about them or they were missing, you could probably find them because they're searching for families. In the beginning, it doesn't really mean a lot, but once they start finding them and you start finding out these things, it does mean a lot.
Well, I guess that was my other question. And I know when you're there at the gravesite and you're with your family members watching your uncle's remains be honored with full military honors that way, I'm sure that's going to be moving. But it sounds like maybe there was a time where you even thought, well, what's the point of this? What are they really going to do with all of this? What have you learned is the point? Why is this important to find those who gave their lives for us and find a way to honor and respect them the way they deserve?
I think we should respect them, that's for sure, because being the age I am, I think that there's a lot of respect has been lost, and I think that we need to find these things again and learn to appreciate the country we live in. It means more than you can imagine when you really get down to it. I know it meant a lot to me to be able to have him buried next to my dad, and it would be nice if my dad knew it.
Did your dad ever tell you much about him?
He followed the war. He used to watch Victory at Sea, and he read a lot of things, and the Tarawa book that I have was his. Just in passing, you know, when you just talk about people at Christmas time or something, he would talk about it. He didn't really like talking about it because he didn't like to be sad. And he was remembered always as a great kid because he was 22 and, you know, everyone loved him.
What would you say is the most important thing that this last month or so has taught you?
Personally, myself, closure is a big deal. I never really thought it was. I think our country is a great country. I just had no idea that how great it was.
And the sacrifices of people like Jack Cremaine and Dwight Randall have served to preserve the uniqueness of America. That's Linda Giss talking about her uncle Dwight, who will be laid to rest November 20th, 2018, 75 years after he was killed in the early moments of the bloody Battle of Tarawa. These families shared their stories with us today to honor their loved ones, but also to encourage others who might be in similar situations. And that probably applies to more people than we realize. There's a wonderful website devoted to this topic. I haven't linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, but it's pretty easy to remember, too. Missingmarines.com. It's the brainchild of Jeffrey Raker, who encourages all families of missing servicemen to submit DNA samples and stay in close contact with the DPAA. Because he's seen that kind of advocacy pay off with the kind of results we've heard about today.
So I started Missing Marines in 2011. I became interested in the story of Sergeant Arthur Irvin, who was a member of the 24th Marines, 4th Marine Division. Sergeant Irvin was the second in command of an ancestor of mine, First Lieutenant Philip Emerson Wood Jr., and the two of them were killed on the same day on Saipan in the same incident on a patrol to rescue some civilians out of a cave. I've been trying to tell the story of their company and naturally got very interested in this, the story of their last patrol. It sounded like a very kind of Hollywood moment. You have the lieutenant being shot and the sergeant, you know, famous last words, "Don't worry, I'm coming for you," running out and being shot right beside him. That kind of drove me to figure out what had happened to the sergeant. And much to my surprise, I found out that he had never been accounted for after the war, and I wondered how that could be. I had all of these letters and these eyewitness reports that said the two of them were buried side by side, so how could this one man be unaccounted for? So just starting to get into that story, I then realized there were two other members of the battalion who were also killed on Saipan who had not been accounted for. And it all just kind of snowballed from there. And I also have a member of my own family, an officer in the Navy, who's unaccounted for from the Battle of Guadalcanal. So I started to get interested in trying to solve some of these mysteries and really got fascinated in kind of the unfinished stories. I think the characterization of missing in action or not recovered, it's a story without an ending. So trying to figure out what had happened and put as many of the pieces together as I could really kind of drew me in. So I started Missing Marines as an attempt to tell some of these stories. And I started very ambitiously thinking that I was going to be able to do a full biography of every single member of the Marine Corps that has not been accounted for since the war. And at the time I started, there were just over 3,000 of them. And I got going with a lot more, I guess you'd say, probably more enthusiasm than actual know-how. It's sort of morphed and evolved since then, and it's become more of an advocacy website. I found it's been very helpful just to have a little bit of the information out there. People who go searching for family members will find it, and then we'll start having a dialogue, and I'll help them out with some research and send them off to kind of continue their own exploration. And I've been able to help with a couple of actual recoveries as well and contacting family members that way. So that's pretty much the point of the site. It's been a kind of a long-running effort to make sure that these stories aren't forgotten and actually do some proactive work to try and account for some of these guys.
What advice would you have for someone who has a loved one who's never been recovered, who's saying, where do I even start and why should I even try? Is there really the hope mm-hmm. that my loved one is going to be discovered and identified someday?
It's true. There are some of these men are never going to be found for one reason or another. They were in an airplane that went down at sea, or at a ship that went down to sea. They were in a submarine that just disappeared. You think about the effects that, you know, the weapons of the time could have on the human body and the effects that the passage of time and the conditions in which these remains are buried can have on the human body. And it's easy to think, well, you know, it's been so long, so much time has passed, how can we possibly hope to recover anyone? But my advice would be don't give up just because it seems impossible, because strange things do happen. I'll tell you the story of this group called History Flight. They had a hunch that they knew where this one particular burial site was on the island of Baisho in the Taro Atoll. It took several years to go through all the due diligence, the right process, to figure out exactly where they wanted to dig. They kept getting information from other researchers saying, no, it's over here, no, it's over here. JPAC, which was the former government agency that was charged with finding these remains, they were out there looking, but they had the wrong information and they were searching in the wrong, just a little bit too far away. And they went out there in, I believe it was in 2015, and started digging and wound up finding what was called Cemetery 27, which had the remains of, I think, just over 40 Marines and one Navy corpsman. They were lying right where they had been buried in late November 1943. So all hope had been given up for ever recovering these individuals by the government, by a lot of the families as well. Some of them were still kind of hanging on that so-and-so might come back someday, but there was no search being undertaken for them. There was no kind of activity going on. They managed to do it. And I think by this point, you know, just over 3 years later, I think there's maybe three or four left from that grave that have not been officially accounted for one reason or another, which is a pretty remarkable success. And to see the reaction of families when their loved one is brought home, I was lucky enough to go to the reburial of one of those Marines. His name was John Prince. He was from Long Island. Family came from all over for this event, and none of them had ever known him. They were all born after he died. There were no surviving members of the family who remembered him, but they'd all grown up knowing who he was or having heard his story or having seen his picture. He was very much still a part of their family. It was like putting a missing piece back that, you know, some members of the family perhaps hadn't even known was missing until they found out that he was being returned. So there is hope out there. I'm still waiting to see if they're going to bring back, you know, Lieutenant Commander Billings from the Quincy. I don't think they probably will, but they did find the captain of the Quincy, and they were killed side by side on the ship. So, you know, there is a chance, no matter how small. As far as first steps, my advice would be learn as much as you can about your ancestor. You can acquire their records, usually from the National Archives in St. Louis. If it's an Army or Army Air Corps serviceman, you might have a bit more trouble because there was a fire there in 1973, I think, that destroyed a lot of records and there were no backups. So a lot of those original records are gone. But there are usually, you know, unit reports or what's called an IDPF, an Individual Deceased Personnel File. There are those filled out for every deceased member of the armed forces. Those you can request. Plug for a friend of mine, Jeff Gentilini of Golden Arrow Research. He's fantastic. I've worked with him for many, many years. He's very, very quick as well. So if you send him a request at his website, he can go out, he can grab the files for you and send them to you. And I think you'd be really surprised at what you can learn. The next step, sort of once you've started to understand their story, where they were stationed, sort of what the last known circumstances are before they were either missing or killed, is to start getting acquainted with the DPAA, which is the Defense POW/MAA Accounting Agency. And they're the current government group that's in charge of accounting for our missing and, you know, non-recovered servicemen. Just from my personal experience, the DPAA is doing a much better job than the predecessors were. And they've also shown a much more kind of willingness to work with independent research groups like History Flight or the Bent Prop Project or Ted Darcy, WFI research organization. And that's really given a lot of attention and I think really a lot of success. The more they succeed, the more kind of inspired they are to, you know, to try harder. So you have an event like the exhuming the unknowns from the Oklahoma, which was kind of resisted at many levels for a very long time. And there had to be a lot of campaigning done to get those graves exhumed. And you'd think, well, how hard can it be? They're right there in Hawaii. But, you know, there's a lot of politics and a lot to consider. But the fact that they've had such an amazing success with finding the Marines and the sailors there, I think it's been really inspiring for that agency. And the success of finding the men from Tarawa really brought that into the news. And so they have a project. I believe this is where Sergeant Randall was found. His remains were actually recovered from Bastio in 1946, and they couldn't be identified at the time. They were brought to the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, and he was just there as an unknown for decades. But the sudden kind of resurgence of interest in the missing from Tarawa has led the DPA to exhume the unknowns from that battle. And they've been also having a great deal of success there as well.
Well, last thing for you, Jeff. I'm sure that spending these last 7 years at this kind of pursuit, even if you can't devote as much time to it as you'd love to, that it must have taught you some things. It must have changed your perspective a little bit. It must have added something to your life. What would you say the biggest impact of this focus, this concentration, this interest has been for you?
It's changed sort of what I understood about the nature of loss in wartime. I'm not from a particularly military family. We did have and had several relatives who served in World War II. We didn't do terribly well. Two of them were killed, and that was kind of it. But, you know, you grow up, you know, hearing about them from your, you know, from my generation, from your grandparents or, you know, from your parents or that sort of thing. And you kind of get the idea that, okay, this person was killed, and it was terrible then, but there was some sort of sense of closure. And now, kind of at this remove, it's healed somewhat. You know, your grandparents may still be sad about the loss of a brother or a cousin, but by and large, that wound has healed. With someone who's missing or there's not been a body that can be brought back for burial, there isn't that sense of closure. There's always kind of that open questioning as to what happened. For many, many years after the war, there was the question, are they really dead? Are they in a hospital somewhere with amnesia and they just don't know? You know, how could the army, you know, tell me one thing that he was buried here and then all of a sudden not know where his body was? A lot of their files have letters from their family that were written back and forth. The amount of pain that these families are going through is really heartrending. And that's something that I think the more removed we get from that moment, you know, the less we kind of understand. You know, you can go to a cemetery and see all the lines of crosses. You can see the names on the, you know, on the Vietnam Memorial, and it's very moving. And you can, you know, watch documentaries and hear stories, and you know, go to, you know, Memorial Day observances. But there's an immediacy to that when the question is not answered. That's really, really very moving. Once you start to get more exposed to that, you'll never know firsthand what that felt like, but it gives you a much deeper appreciation for the sacrifices that not just that the soldiers made, but that everybody made, that their families made, that their loved ones made, that their friends made. And that really gives you, I think, a much better, more complete picture of kind of the trauma that is warfare.
Understanding everything that you just described, has that had an impact on the way you view America or the freedoms that we have here?
It does. I find it inspiring that people are willing to go out and fight for the intangible idea of what this country stands for, what they think it should stand for. So it sort of just kind of reinforced that feeling kind of to the nth degree. When the country gets involved in a war, we're not just asking a lot of the people in uniform, you're asking a lot of the entire population. I've heard some veterans as well sort of echo this sentiment, and you need to make damn sure you know exactly what you're getting into and look for as many ways to avoid that sort of situation as you can.
That's Jeffrey Raker, the man behind MissingMarines.com. Link to it at HometownHeroesRadio.com, where you'll also find a link to Jeff's upcoming book, Leaving Mac Behind, The Lost Marines of Guadalcanal. Thanks to Jeff, and again to Linda Gist, Donna Morin, and Elaine Holliday for giving us a picture of how these families are processing the long-awaited news that their loved ones are coming home and will finally be laid to rest. Those two young Marines, one at Pearl Harbor on the USS Oklahoma, one on the bloody beach of Tarawa, they help put names and faces to a simple statement that we should never lose sight of and never allow to become cliche. Those same four words we finish with every time here on Hometown Heroes. So as you gather with your family this Thanksgiving, think about that Gold Star family that's missing a hero at the holiday table. And let the legacies of courageous Americans like Jack Cremaine and Dwight Randall remind you that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.